At midnight tonight, I'll have 7 days, 5 months, and 30 years of sobriety. My home group is the Supreme Group of Alcoholic Anonymous that meets every Sunday morning at Art's Restaurant on the corner of South Main and Waterloo. If you're in town, come see us. I'd like to welcome you all to the 62nd Annual Founders Day Celebration. He told me tonight that if he give a good report back to Jack's sponsor, maybe Jack will become a keynote speaker. There is something else about Jack I'd like to say, and you guys can see him about this after the meeting. Jack has an intergroup office approved volume of tapes out. The name of them is Jack Sullivan, the best of Jack Sullivan around the world, volume 1 and 2. So if you would see Jack after the meeting, I'm sure that he can arrange for you to get them. My speaker tonight is George Ellison, and I didn't have the opportunity to pick this man because I was pushed into the position that I hold today because another man had to leave it. And when I got there, they told me that he'd already picked a speaker, and they told me who it was. I still didn't know him, but I said he'll be all right, and so I let it stay. After meeting George yesterday, being with him last night and all day today, I think he made a good decision. Not only does Jack take his warm-up man, does George take his warm-up man with him, he also is a good AA. So without any more from me, I give you George Ellison from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Thank you, Jim. My name is George Ellison. I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And by the grace of a loving God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a mood-altering drug since October the 26th, 1966. And for that, I'm very grateful. My home group is the primary purpose group in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which I think is the best group in the world, and I took Jack's advice. I didn't leave it. I stay there and keep messing it up. But I would like to go on record right now, Jack, wherever you are. I don't know where you are right now, but I didn't have anything to do with what was said up here. Jim did that on his own. He really did. But I do appreciate you coming warming up the crowd for me. I have noticed, though, with the crowd, I need to tell you all something. You all need to get a little enthusiasm about your sobriety. I would like to thank the committee for giving me the privilege, and I do think it is a privilege, to be able to participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I told David when we were coming up here Friday that to an alcoholic, and I don't mean to get hokey or anything, but to an alcoholic, coming to Akron is like coming to Mecca. I want to thank the old timers and you people in Akron who have kept this thing going from that very first spark back in 1935, and it is truly, to me, just a wonderful experience to be here and to be able to participate. I mean, I'm a... If you feel like I'm talking a little slow and funny, you know, it's because Jim told me to slow down, okay? It's not because I have a Southern accent. When I walked in there and they said, welcome home, to me, it was truly, truly a blessing. You know, I'm like Jack, the old timers of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's been some great ones, and You know, my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous, for instance, I got sober, and someone said, I think out earlier, Bob, I met a Bob out front, and he said, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "Let me tell you something. There are more people in this auditorium tonight than in the town that I got sober in." That is absolutely the truth. I got sober in Williamstown, West Virginia. Population 7,000 people. But my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous, talking about old timers, I was very fortunate. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a young man, but my first meeting was in Parkersburg, West Virginia. It was a closed meeting. And the second meeting that I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, 2 days sober, I went to the Colonial Group in Marietta, Ohio, and the speaker was Norm Young. And Norm Young, I don't know, I know a lot of you know Norm Young, but anyway, I'm sitting there 27 years old, and Norm gets up and he said that his entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous was that he crawled across 13 dead bodies to take another drink of canned heat and went totally blind. And I'm sitting there 27 years old thinking, my God, the man ought to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But you see, I related to what Norm said. He spoke the language of the heart, and he was an alcoholic, and he had the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. The third night I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, I went to Parkersburg, West Virginia. I was standing out there before the meeting started, and all of a sudden I saw a Greyhound bus pull up, and off walked off this Greyhound bus a little Amish man by the name of Mose Yoder. And Mose and Mary was behind him, and six stair-step children were following him into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think that I got a very good start in this program, and I'm grateful for that, because I believe that I'm here by the grace of God. And I was told that grace meant an unwarranted gift, and I did nothing to deserve this. But I would like to say to the new people that came up, the couple that got the books, and I hope that you stay, and I say this to every newcomer that comes into our meeting. I hope you stay and realize that tonight is the very, very, very best day of your life, because it was for me when I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we were talking yesterday out there, and I was talking to Jerry, and I got a little upset, not inside, you know. We were talking, he was saying something about these people that get up and say that they don't like to talk about drunkenness and all that, and they like to talk about sobriety. Well, I'm one of those. But let me tell you this, that I got sober in right beside Ohio. And I know enough that in Alcoholics Anonymous in Ohio, that if you don't get up here and qualify yourself as an alcoholic, someone's going to ask you to come down. So believe me, I am going to talk and let you know that somewhere along the line, I did drink a little liquor. Now, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God I came into a traditional meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where the big book was read and where the language of the heart was spoken, and my sponsor put the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in my hand. But he told me one of the most important things that I ever heard in my life. And he said, there's two things that are very important in Alcoholics Anonymous that you need to realize. That alcoholism is a disease, and the only recovery from is spiritual. And you know, that is true today as it was then. But you see, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, like a lot of those old-timers I heard on the panel, which I thought was wonderful, I was 27 years old. And the people that I drank with out on the street, you know, all those smart people that we drank with, and they're still out there, you know, drinking. That's how smart they are. But they said I wasn't an alcoholic. See, I didn't meet that criteria. I was not. To me, an alcoholic had to be, first of all, a very old man. About as old as Jack's old. And you had to wear a long overcoat in the middle of July. You had patent leather shoes on. Your feet would pat out the bottom of your shoes, patting the cement. You didn't have a wristwatch. And you lived over under the bridge. Now, you see, I didn't meet that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, first of all, I was 27 years old. I didn't own an overcoat, and that's pretty tough where I came from, not to have an overcoat, but I didn't want to waste money buying an overcoat when you could drink liquor. I had a wristwatch. It was an old beat-up Timex, and it didn't keep time, but it was a wristwatch. So you see, I didn't meet that criteria when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. What I had done is I had reached a point in my life that I couldn't drink and I couldn't quit drinking. And you see, that's where all we alcoholics reach. And that's a horrible, horrible place to be. And when this man, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I feel like I came here, it was the court of last resort. There was no other place for me to go. I'd been a lot of places for my alcoholism. You know, and when this man brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous, he told me that alcoholism was a physical, mental, and spiritual illness. And you see, instead of going through a whole big rigmarole about all the little things that I did drinking, I would like to tell you and qualify to you as an alcoholic where I was in those three areas of my life when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, physically, like I said, I was 27 years old. I weighed 255 pounds. I was bloated. I was one of those drunks that bloated. I never went to a treatment center. I was afraid of the jitter joints. Now, back then, they had jitter joints. Now, I did drink a little bit of green lizard now, formaldehyde, but I used to get that from the doctor, you know, and get a prescription for it. But I was afraid of those. When I wanted to get off a drunk, I just got determined and walked this little streets of this little town that I got sober in until I could get off of alcohol. So, I shouldn't really say I haven't been to a treatment center. I went to two treatment centers in my hometown. The city and the county. And and you can get sober there. It's pretty hardcore treatment, but you can get sober. We used to have an old man in our group who used to say, if you want to get sober, slap a cop. Well, I'm here to tell you, when I was 18 years old, I was down in Georgia. And a cop stopped me for going about 120 miles an hour, drunk and whatever. And I slapped him. And I'm here to tell you, I got sober. Real quick. I got sober real quick. Now, I didn't stay sober, but I got sober. So you can do that, you know. So that's a little hardcore treatment. And that's where I was physically. You know, I was afraid of those jitter joints, and I'd heard about them. You know, I heard about those old men that used to go out there and not, all that. So I just walked off a drunk and when I got determined. And that wasn't too often. But mentally was a different thing, different story. Now, mentally, where I was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked around with impending doom. Or impending calamity, like the big book talks about. I was afraid of everything. I was married this particular time, the first wife, to a little Irish girl. Now, I don't really have to go beyond too much now qualifying as an alcoholic, because now that I've said that I had multiple wives, you know that I'm probably an alcoholic. But she weighed 115 pounds and a little Irish girl, and on a good day, I could whip her. I mean, really. I mean, I had the reach on her, and, you know, I just... Now, here's where I was. I was one of those drunks that I used to, like, when I took a drink, I liked to go downtown. I mean, you know, I like to go downtown. But through this drunkenness, I usually ended up where I lost my sea legs. I couldn't motivate. I couldn't move around. So I'd end up at home, laying in that bed, drinking on that bottle. And where I was at that point, if that little girl wasn't in the house to protect me from them, now I know I don't have to explain to the alcoholics who them are. The Al-Anons might need some explanation who them are, but them are those people that are after us. And I had to have the butcher knife by the bed, the TV on, the radio on. I had all the lights on in the house. I wouldn't answer the door. I wouldn't answer the telephone. I'd peek out, you know. I only went out at night, you know. I loved it when Bill Wilson used to call us the children of the night, you know, because that's what I was, you know. I operated all the time at night. And there was another phase of my sort of mental part of my alcoholism. I don't know if too many of you can relate, but I was one of those alcoholics that could not watch Ben Casey or Dr. Kildare on television. Now, if I watched Dr. Kildare or Ben Casey on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I had whatever disease was on Tuesday night. I have had every disease known to man. I've had diseases you can't catch in this country. I've had elephantitis. I've been pregnant twice. Fortunately, I aborted. But you know, that's a funny thing to talk about today. But it's not funny back then. You know, I got sober in a small town, and I drove a little country doctor crazy. In this little town, and I don't know, you know, you're all from Akron and bigger cities, but in a country town or a little town, the doctor sees people as they get there. You know, there's no appointments and whatever. And this little doctor, Doc Bateman, you know, I was 23 years old, and I started having a series of heart attacks. And I used to go over to Doc Bateman's, you know, and I'd get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, be the first one there. And he'd put me on the EKG machine. He had a little laboratory in his office, you know, they had everything. Put me on the EKG machine, he'd check me out. He'd say, George, please go to work, leave me alone, you're fine. I did this like 14 straight days once. And on the 15th day, at the time I was a traveling salesman, you know, by trade, and the 15th day, I was like an hour from the house at an industrial plant at 8 o'clock in the morning, calling on a customer that I was trying to sell product to, and all of a sudden, the big one hit. You know the one that Red Fox talks about? I mean, the big one. So I look over at this guy, and I said, you know, you're going to have to excuse me. You probably don't realize it, but I'm dying right here in front of you. Well, he excused me. He was happy to get me out of his office. Anyway, to make a long story short, I called that little Irish girl, and I said, you know, you need to call the hospital. Now, I called her long distance, see. And I called her three or four times, stopped alongside the road, you know. And I said, you need to call the hospital, because if they can save me, you know, I would appreciate it, you know. So I got there, and I got my little ditty bag, and we went to the hospital. Now, a hospital at that time wasn't a real good place to put us alcoholics, of my type anyway. And so I started checking in, and the girl at admission said, well, you're in room 324. Now, I'm not, you know, I was a little rum dumb, but I wasn't that dumb that I didn't know that wasn't on the third floor, so I picked up the little ditty bag and started to walk over to the elevator, and she went, oh, no, you can't walk.
Now I'm 23 years old. They give me a wheelchair, and they wheel me up to the room. And I thought, oh, God, I will never make it to the room. You know, I'll be dead before that. Now, to make a real long story short, I was raised in a half-Christian home. My mother was a real fine Christian lady, a beautiful, wonderful woman. My father was an alcoholic golfer. But you see, at the time, I worked for them. And my father, being an alcoholic, now I know there's people sitting out there right now saying, we don't call other people alcoholics. But I'll tell you, I had an old timer down in Clarksburg, West Virginia one time tell me, he said, let me tell you something, George. If you walk like a duck, look like a duck, and talk like a duck, you're a duck. Now, I'm here to subscribe to you that my father was pretty ducky. Now, he may not have been an alcoholic, but anyway, we fought. What I'm getting around to is they diagnosed my illness. This doctor looked at me and said, you know, you have hypertension and you're overworked. Now, explaining about that alcoholic father, he fired me every week. I mean, he only told me one thing that I ever believed. I never listened to him on anything else. He told me when I went on the road as a salesman, he said, let me tell you something, son. He said, once you take a drink, you quit working. I did that. So therefore, you know that I didn't, you know, I was never overworked. But anyway, I believed that, you know, and I think he even told me to go home and have a few drinks, you know, before dinner to calm down. Whatever hypertension is. I'm a dumb West Virginian, so I really can't, you know, I don't understand what it is today. But that's where I was mentally when I came into this program. Spiritually, I can tell you real quick. I was raised in a fundamentalist church. Now, I'm not up here knocking churches. I really am not. Alcoholics Anonymous has restored a lot of us to our churches. But when I was 12 years old in this church, and my mother had a beautiful program of spirituality through this church, but she took her little alcoholic to this church at 12 years old, and they put a little white robe on me. Now, I don't know what they do in Akron, but in this church and in West Virginia back there, if they did not build a tub in the church, I'm sure there's a religious name for it, but a big... Now, when I was 12 years old, they took me, they put a white washcloth over me. I had a little white robe. I looked very angelic, you know, and they dunked me down in this tub. Now, I still resent the preacher a little bit because I think he held me down too long. Because when I came up, I was sputtering and fighting for breath. And I walked out of that church when I was 12 years old and never came back to church until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I became an agnostic. Now, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's how I walked in here. Now, that sponsor put me in the big book. Now, I would like to tell you, and would like to end this right now and just walk off and tell you that I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous and everything was wonderful. That I just turned my life around and that, you know, I got on a white horse and I rode out in the sunset and somebody said, who was that masked man? And they said, the Lone Ranger, you know, or whatever. That is just not what happened. That's why I like to talk about the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's how I got sober. But I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the man started talking to me about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came for a year and a half and went to meetings every day. Now, I was like the chairman of the old timers meeting. I'm not here to argue with anybody, or I'm not trying to get anybody upset, but just for me. We hear a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know where they came from. They came from somewhere, but you're like the 90 and 90. I just am, really, believe me, I'm the type of alcoholic that if they'd have told me 90 and 90, I'd have been drunk the 91st day. I just was not, it's just the way I was. But you see, they didn't say that to me. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we had a bunch of old characters, like I told you, I walked in 27 years old. And you know, you heard it the other night when they were talking, but I looked in there and my sponsor was the kid of the group before I got there. And he was 18 years older than I was. And when I walked in AA, everybody was older. I mean, they're sitting around. And one of the other things that sort of got to me, you know, is that everybody, at least at the meeting that I went to, had something wrong with them. I mean, they'd twitch and they'd, you know. And I sat there, I wanted to develop a twitch, you know, so I could, trying to identify, trying to get, you know. But those people loved me sober. But you see, I didn't take to the program of alcoholics. I went to meetings every night, and you know, like the 90 and 90. My sponsor never told me 90 and 90. Matter of fact, he just always picked me up for a meeting. He would call me every night, and he interrupted my dinner every night to tell me what time he was going to pick me up to go to a meeting, or I was going to pick him up to take him to a meeting, or whatever. And I can remember I was sober 3 or 4 months one night, and he called, and I'm still living with that little Irish girl, and he interrupted dinner, and I, you know, listened. We were going to go somewhere, so he was going to pick me up at 7:30 or whatever. So I come back to the dinner table, and I said, you know, I don't know why he always calls and interrupts my dinner. I'm getting tired of it. Besides that, I don't even want to go to a meeting. I don't even understand. And she said, well, why don't you tell him that? I said, damn, if I'm going to tell him, you tell him. I'm afraid of it. And that's the truth. You know, I say I was afraid of him because this man loved me sober. It was my perception of what he was saying to me. He did not say anything to me out of malice. He just told me what I needed to hear. So, you know, I was going to meetings every night. You know, the old timers used to call them two-steppers. Now, I'm not so sure I was a two-stepper. And like I told you before, I'm not real smart. So I don't know exactly, I'm not good in fractions, so I don't know exactly what kind of stepper I am. You might be able to figure it out. But what I did at that point, I took one half of step one. I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I jumped all the way and took one third of step 12. I went out and carried the message. Now, my sponsor used to say, George, you are not carrying the message. You are carrying the mess. Now, you know, I don't really subscribe to that, that you have to be through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and have the message to go out and help a drunk. I'm not saying that. I think someone with one day's sobriety can help another drunk. I think if I've got one day's sobriety and I go tell a drunk that I've got one day's sobriety, and if he wants what I have, he can come with me to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, that's carrying him to the message. But at this point, this is what I've done. Now, a year and a half later, I'm doing this for a year and a half, still an agnostic. Only thing I'm doing is going to meetings. Have not done anything about George. Now, we've reached the point here that I walked up on the hill in Marietta, Ohio that day to see an old man whose sobriety dated back to 1943 in Pittsburgh. He lived in Marietta at that time. Glenn Benedict, God love him. And somebody said it the other night about the truth. These people tell us the truth. I walked up to Glenn Benedict, and I said, Glenn, you know I'd be better off drunk than the way I am right now. And you know what that kind, loving man said to me? And he is a kind, loving man. He was a beautiful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He looked me dead in the eyes, And he said, George, you're right. You would be better off drunk than you are right now. But he added on something to that. He said, but there is an answer. And it's contained in it within the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I had to come clean and tell Glenn that I didn't know anything about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what they were talking about. And he said, and I subscribe to you right now that if someone in this room is wrestling with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, grab one of these old timers and have them walk you through the steps, because this is what this man did for me, and he literally saved my life. Now, like I told you, see, I was at a point, at that point, before this suicide, or at least the ones I've known, commit suicide from a dry period, not a wet period. It's because we can't handle sobriety. It's not because we can't handle drinking. Somehow I muddled through the drinking. It was being sober that I was having a problem with. It was living sober. Because, you see, I was a suicidal alcoholic. When I was drinking, now, this is the type of suicidal alcoholic I was when I was drinking. I wanted to commit suicide by jumping in front of a parked car. Because I didn't want to hurt myself. You know what I'm saying? I always like to tell this story because I was on the bridge at Williamstown. They make fun of that in my home group sometimes because one of them went up with me last year. I was up at the meeting on the river down in Marietta, and he came up with me, and he says the bridge isn't real high, but it's a new bridge. The one I was on was real high, but anyway. I like to tell this because I really, truly believe that we're one drink away from a drunk. All of us are. I may be farther away than some people from the last drink, but I'm no farther away from the next drink. I'm sorry.
The university police have asked me to announce that if anyone leave the building, they cannot come back in because of the capacity of JUR. If you have a red ticket or not, you still cannot come back in once you leave.
That's all right. And that's okay that they said that. And I'm here to tell you, if you're new, don't slap him. Anyway, I like to tell a story. I was up on the bridge, and I drew a crowd up there. I had about 6 or 7 people. And I wasn't real close to the railing because I didn't want to fall. But I like to tell this because you never know when we might go back out. And if I'm out there and I'm on the bridge some night, you'll know how to get me off. The guy to become my sponsor at that time was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was attracting me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but someone called him, said, George is up on the bridge, he's going to jump. So guy came up there, and he said those magic words. He said, George, he said, let's go down to Murphy's Bar and Grill, and I'll buy you a drink, and we'll talk about it. I beat him off the bridge. But you see, that's the way I was drunk, sober. I seriously contemplated suicide because I couldn't handle this. You see, I believe that sometimes we in Alcoholics Anonymous do a terrible injustice to drunks if we just tell them, go to meetings and don't drink. Because if you strip the alcoholic of alcohol and you don't give him anything to replace it, he's in big trouble. So anyway, Glenn says, and now we're at the point that Glenn is going to walk me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like I told you, here I am, a year and a half dry. I'm still an agnostic. You know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of people come today and they want to be different, you know. I was no different. I wanted to be different, you know. So I figured out, you know, I told my sponsor guy, I said, you know, I'm an agnostic. Well, that sweet, loving sponsor looked at me. He said, George, first of all, he said, let's get this out of the way real quick. He said, you are too stupid and too rum-dumb to prove the non-existence of God. And that's what an agnostic is. He can prove the non-existence of God. And you are not capable of that. So please don't say you're an agnostic. Or an atheist, I'm sorry. He said, now, I understand that an agnostic is a non-believer. And if you want to call yourself an agnostic, go ahead. So I said, okay, that'll set me apart. That'd be a little different. So I became an agnostic and was pretty proud of it. And then he explained to me, you know, because I'm trying to be different. Then he explained to me, he said, you know, George, there is a chapter in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says, we agnostics. Does not say George the agnostic or the only agnostic in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, we agnostics. So he said, therefore, somebody must have had a problem with God before you. Now, that's the type of man this man was. And so now we, you know, Glenn sat down and he started talking to me about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you see, I had taken step one. Now, I'm not up here to lecture you or tell you how to take the steps. The only reason I talk about the steps is to tell you how I recovered in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, see, I had that all turned around. You know, I used to look at that step and say, my life's unmanageable because I drink. Therefore, if I quit drinking, my life will become manageable. Now that, Glenn says, George, that's not exactly what the step says. You see, alcohol is not our problem. Alcoholism is our problem. And he said, the step says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, hyphen, which means there's a separate thought coming that our lives have become unmanageable. And if you don't take the step that way, you'll never take the next 11. And you see, that was true. As long as I looked at that step, that I was going to become manageable once I quit drinking, I would never have to look at the next 11 steps. So I took the step that way. And I got to step two, and it said, came to believe the power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, I don't know about you. As an alcoholic, I have a lot of problems with step two. You know, I looked at steps two, and first of all, they're talking about insanity. I don't care what you do. Take my wife, my children, whatever, but don't call me nuts. I can't handle that. I don't think any alcoholic could take that, you know. And they're talking about came to believe, you know, and here I was. I was one of those smart aleck alcoholics. I thought they were saying to me, find God. So I would go in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, real smart like, you know, open the door and say, well, God, if you're there, come out. You know, if he'd have showed me a burning bush, you know, like he did some other people, I'd have been a believer right away. You know, it's like slapping that cop. When I slapped that cop, he explained to me real good why you don't slap cops. Matter of fact, that day in that jail cell, he became my higher power. I mean, because he just explained it real good. I would have done anything for that man. I mean, he just... Glenn looked at me and says, George, first of all, the step says came to believe. A passage of time. He said, I think you're misreading our literature. The ABCs say God could and would if he were sought. It does not say God could and would if he were found. And it's in the seeking that we find him. So you see, I had to start taking action. And my sponsor was big on action. You know, like I told you, I was one of those alcoholics that went everywhere for my alcoholism. I went to jail, I went to psychiatrists, I went to church a lot. You know, I was one of those, I've been dipped, re-dipped, undipped, dedicated, rededicated. I've taken a dive for a bowl of soup. I've done the whole thing. But with an alcoholic like me, I would be in rapture 5 minutes. Then it's gone. Now, my sponsor explained to me that there's a reason for that. Most major religions and philosophies will tell you to change your thinking and your actions will change. Now, that may work for the world's population. But for an alcoholic like me, that does not work. I've never thought myself into anything. But you see, he said, Alcoholics Anonymous is telling you the exact opposite. We're telling you to change your actions and your thinking will change. Thank you. So I started believing, you know, and then I started looking at the word insanity. Now we're getting to the nuts part, you see. And I thought, well, you know what they mean by insanity? It's probably all the crazy things that I did when I was drunk, you know, like getting drunk and standing on the table, dancing on the table, throwing people through windows or, you know, whatever the, you know. Glenn said, George, that's not what insanity means. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about how we react under alcohol. You know, if you take an 87-year-old choir lady and you give her a fifth of liquor, she's going to do some crazy things. Now, that does not make her an alcoholic, but she's going to do some crazy things. He said, what we're talking about is that you knew every time you picked up a drink what was going to happen to you, but you did it time after time after time after time. You know, Jack was talking about the nut houses. This was brought real to light with me because I went with my sponsor one time to the nut house. And they had an AA meeting in the nut house. And he went down there to lead. Now, this little alcoholic training unit, as they called it, was right next to the crazy people. But they were sort of separated. Same housing and whatever. But one of the guys got out of the other side. He was, you know, he was crazy. He thought he was the sheriff, you know, or whatever. He came over and sat down on the front row. Now, my sponsor's giving his AA talk. And he's giving his talk, and this little crazy person sitting on the front row. And after the meeting's over, he comes up to talk to my sponsor. And he says, may I ask you a question? Well, my sponsor's like the rest of them. You know, Jack said it today. You do whatever those people want to do. You learn when you go in there. Yeah, well, yeah. He said, well, certainly. So the little crazy guy looks at him and he says, if alcohol did all that to you, why'd you drink it? Now, he's crazy. He's never going to get out, you know. I walked right out of that night out of the nut house. But you see, I understood what they were talking about, the insanity. And then I came to step three, and Glenn started to explain to me. You know, I was one of those that looked at step three, and I thought, now we're talking about perfection. I'm going to do this thing, and all of a sudden, I'm going to shoot that will up the stairs to God. God's going to turn around and shoot it back down to me. I'm going to walk the face of the earth, and they're all going to kiss the hem of my garment. Glenn explained to me, he says, George, it says that we turn our life and our will over to the care and protection of God. It's still our life, still our will, but we put it in God's hands. Now, that made sense to me. Now, Glenn was one of the, like I say, his sobriety dated back to the early 40s, We still do it in our group today. I don't know if you do it in your group, but Glenn, when he took the third step with me, he and I got down on our knees. Now, I felt silly. I felt, you know, whatever. I'd never prayed with myself, much less another man. But he held my hand, and we took out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we prayed the third step prayer together. And Glenn explained to me, he said, George,
Now, I don't know. You hear this in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot, and I'm not here to argue with anybody again. But you hear a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, well, you know, I turn it over at 8 o'clock in the morning, at 8:30 I take it back, and at 9 I turn it back over, da-da-da-da. That would drive me crazy. Glenn explained to me, he said, George, we're going to take step 3. You are going to embark on working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really the first step to recovery. He said, the only way you can take this step back is to come back to me. We'll get back down on our knees, and we'll say, God, we don't want to live this way of life. And I have not done that to this day, and it's going to be hard to do now because Glenn's in the big meeting. I reaffirm that step every day of my life. When I get up in the morning, I remember who I am, what I am, and where the solution lies. And I think that's exactly what it is. You know, when Glenn talked to me about the third step, he said, you know, he talked about it being the first step to recovery. And the reason he said that is that because it's just like if we go to the doctor. And I go to the doctor and I give him some symptoms. And he will diagnose the problem. If I'll tell him how I'm feeling, he's got step 1. He'll tell me the problem. And then he's going to give me a solution. Step 2, came to believe. He's going to tell me, well, you've got the flu, so you need to go home. You get 8 hours bed rest. You take this medicine. You do this. You do that. And you're going to be well. Now, that's all well and good. Because at this point, what we have is that we have the problem and we have the solution. But I don't get any better until I apply the solution. And Glenn told me that's what I'm doing in step 3. I'm starting to apply the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I got to step 4. Now, I think every alcoholic that walks in, the young man that got the book, I guarantee if you ask him, and he's in his first day of sobriety, how important step 4 is, he's going to tell you. He knows that it's important. He may not know why, like me, you know. He's going to know that, because we know, we picked that up very first day. I knew step 4 was important. Everybody talked about it. You know, I was one of those alcoholics. I'd go to every meeting, and when they talked about step 4, I listened. And whatever way they did it, I tried to do it. You know, if a guy got up and said, well, you know, I went to the John, and I sit down on the John, and I took step 4. I'd go home, and I'd sit down on the John, and I'd try to take step 4, you know. Now, it says fearless moral inventory. Glenn looked at me and said, George, even a dumb alcoholic like you knows that fearless means less fear. And the only thing that takes fear away is faith. Because my sponsor used to say, and I remember him saying it all the time, and I've used it and used it and used it. Fear knocked on the door, faith answered, no one was there. And I've used that all my life. So when I got to that point, I took step 3. I should not have any fear. I could take a look at myself. I could take this inventory. And so when I got ready to write this down, and you know it does say in the big book, you know it's amazing to me. Now, I was, like I said, I did it a lot of ways. And I even at one point ran into that pamphlet. You know the pamphlet I'm talking about? It amazes me. We have a lot of people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous writing pamphlets explaining to us how we take our program. Now, that's never made sense to me. But I was like any other alcoholic. I got one of those pamphlets. Now, I went to the meeting with that pamphlet that night and showed it to my sponsor. Now, Jim said that I cannot use profanity from the podium, so I really can't explain to you what Guy said about me and the pamphlet. What I can tell you is I didn't use it. Now, he said in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says there's 3 lists. There's a resentment list. Bill even says what type of inventory it is. He says it's an inventory of unsalable goods, what we're going to get rid of. Because, see, I was one of those alcoholics. I sat in a meeting one night and heard a guy say, you know, when I was out there drinking, I was so hard on myself. And I really, I need to put down some assets. Boy, that sounds pretty good. So I went back to Guy. I said, you know, I'm taking this inventory and I was so hard on myself, I need to put down assets also. guy looked at me and said, George, let me tell you something. He said, I don't know if you understand this or not, but he said, just the fact that you think you have assets is a liability. He says it's a moral inventory of ourselves. So I took that. I got to know a little bit about George. And then I came to this step five, and you know, then I knew what the problem was, why they talk about fear in step four. It's really step five. Because I had to admit to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. And I sat down and I explained this to Glenn. Then I went down and explained it to Guy, my sponsor. And I took that inventory. And Glenn explained to me after the inventory that I was to go home. And that I was to reflect on the first five proposals. And then I was supposed to take a preparation step. You know, at this point in time now, we have a preparation and action step. I prepared in step six. I became entirely ready. I prepared. I prayed. I did what it was to be able to take the action in step seven, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. And then I got to another preparation step. I got to step eight. And step eight, Glenn says, we make a list of all the people we've harmed. Now, you know, here I am. I knew that the resentment list, I pulled that over. I got them. I added some other people. But when I first started to make the list, now, the first person I put down, when I was 18 years old, I was walking down the streets of my hometown, and we had speakeasies in. West Virginia was a dry state. And there was a club that I wanted to go into, and it was upstairs. And the bottom door was open, and then I got upstairs, and it was locked. And you know how we alcoholics are, real paranoid. I thought, well, they're in there partying, and they don't want me in there, so I just tore the door down and went in. Well, it was closed. I mean, you know, nobody there. So I went on my merry way. I don't know where I went, but I went. Now, some years later, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're the first people to come to my mind. Glenn said, boy, you're sick. You are a real sick individual. He said, first of all, he said, the step says harm. It does not say hurt. He said, harm can be mental or physical, but it's lasting. He said, put down the people that you harmed. We're talking now family, employers, your friends, the people that you actually harmed. He said, those people don't care. That bar has changed hands 25 times. Forget that place. Forget the bartenders that you called an SOB because they forgot you as soon as they threw you out in the street. That's not what the step said. So then I had to go down and do that the way he's talking about. Then I got to step nine. Now, I don't know about you alcoholics, but I'm one of those that found step nine 3 days sober. When I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous, I owed a lot of small loan companies. Now, let me explain this to you. I hope someone here is not into the small loan business. Because all small loan companies have a manager by the name of Mr. Shapiro. He wears dark glasses. And they operate because of us alcoholics. I'm serious. There is nobody in the world that would pay 44% interest, except alcoholics. Really. When I got sober and I could go to the bank and get 4%, I couldn't believe it. But anyway, I used to kite loan companies because I lived in West Virginia, but right across from the state of Ohio. The state of Ohio, you could get $2,000. You could only get $500 at West Virginia loan company. You could go over to Ohio and pay all four West Virginia loan companies. It's amazing. So when I got to step nine on the third day, I decided that what I needed to do is to go make amends. So I went over to those people and told them the wonderful thing that I was doing, staying sober, and that I was going to pay them. Now, a year and a half later, when I get to step nine, Glenn explained to me the spirituality of that step. He said, you know something, George? It's not an amend until you pay him. Never dawned on me 3 days sober, you know. Same thing with actions. Same thing. If I go say to my family that I'm sorry, I need to live that amend and not do it again. So then, you know, I did those amends, and of course Glenn helped me with a few of those. You know, we had those kind of sponsors that he drove me up in the front of a place one time and he said, "Get out." I said, "What are we going to do?" He said, "You're going to go tell that man you're sorry and pay him some money." I said, "Oh, okay." And he waited until I did that. But I didn't do all of them that way. You know, I didn't need to be nudged with all of them. But God loved them. They loved us sober, and they walked us through these steps. And then I got to step 10, and it says, continue to take a personal inventory. And you know, Glenn explained to me, he said, you know, the word continued means I've done it before. It means it's something I've done. The fourth step. And when you're wrong, promptly admit it. Now, I don't know if you would understand this or not as an alcoholic. I would rather say to you, you're right, than for me to say, I'm wrong. But today I can do that. Today I can take an inventory, and to me it's the same thing that I did in step 4, and it kicks me back to those earlier steps. Because if I have a resentment, I put it on paper, and I have to go back and do the same thing that I did in 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 up to that point. And then I came to the 11th step, and you know, as an alcoholic, I only looked at part of the step. And I ignored the last part of the step. I looked at the first part. I wanted to know what God's will was for me. I figured at that point, His will for me is probably to talk to a bunch of people in Yankee Stadium or something and sober them up or whatever. You know, that kind of crazy stuff. Today I understand what God's will for me is. It is to be sober and do the things in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have to do to stay sober. But you see, I ignored the last part of the step where it says the power to carry that out. Now, I don't know about you, but I believe the power of God is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Matter of fact, Gay is my favorite Al-Anon, and she's here tonight, and I don't want to upset Gay. But we had an old man in my group that used to say that God was an alcoholic. Now, the reason he said God was an alcoholic is that he was in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that he ever attended, even closed meetings, and God knows you've got to be an alcoholic to be in a closed meeting. But I drew on this power, and that's where I draw on this power today. And you know, someone said it, who I was talking to today, and I forget the conversation, but they were talking about it being a WE program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, the very first spiritual concept I ever learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we used to have an old man in our group that used to say, "I got drunk and we stayed sober." And I was 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous and sat in a meeting one night, and he said, "We stay sober," and I understood exactly what he meant, because I never stayed sober. We were doing something that George never did before in his life, and that is a spiritual concept, and that is the power of God, and that is the power that I have found in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and through you people. And we come to the 12th step, and the 12th step says, you know, after having a spiritual awakening, and I haven't had a spiritual awakening, and to me that is a wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, to believe, to know, you can't really feel the impact about when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, how a sick, agnostic, spiritually sick person, but today to have the faith and the belief that I have, only because I listen to you people. And got a God of my understanding and a power that is so hard for me to believe. But I had this spiritual awakening, and it says we carry this message to other alcoholics. Now, it doesn't say wet alcoholics or dry alcoholics. You know, I've heard people say in Alcoholics Anonymous, the guy that's here tonight drunk is the most important person in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't believe that. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that a drunk's been there and he didn't even know where he was. But you see, there might be someone 5 years sober, 10 years sober, 25 years sober, 35 years sober, that has not heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think they're the most important person in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe, because of the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, that when you walk in that door, it's your responsibility to 12-step me. And on the same token, when you walk in the door, it is my responsibility to 12-step you. And that's a we program, and that's what it's all about as far as I'm concerned. And we try to practice these principles in all our affairs. I wish I could tell you that I'm a saint, and I'm not. You know, Bill, when he put the book together, he explained everything. You heard the reading tonight, you know, how he gave directions and all that. He put one sentence in there that says, he put a period behind, we are not saints. Period. I am not a saint. All I'm trying to do is to progress spiritually through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and do what I have to do to stay sober. I've had ups and downs in my program and my sobriety. You people have been there with me. And we have done this thing together because I truly believe Alcoholics Anonymous works because we share weaknesses, not strengths. If I stand up here and tell you how strong I am, that does nothing for you nor me. But if I stand up here and share with you, you and I together, our weaknesses, we get strong. And I believe that. I would like to close. I'm unlike Jack. I have a favorite story that I tell when I close. I would like to tell you this. I know I tell the story for myself because I like to remember where I've been in my sobriety and the certain stages that I've gone through. And to me, it explains Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsored a man in West Virginia. I was sober 5 years. Now, at that point in my life, at 5 years sobriety, I was spiritually arrogant. I was the point in my sobriety that Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Smith did not make a move without consulting me. I sponsored a barber back in West Virginia. The guy's name was Pete. Actually, I quit going to Pete after he got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous because he just couldn't cut hair sober. Cut a beautiful head of hair drunk, but he just couldn't. I don't know what it was, but anyway. Pete was what a lot of us, me included at that time, called a loser. Because Pete would come in, he'd get 8 months sobriety, he'd go back out, he'd come back in, he'd have 12 months, he'd go back out, back and forth. At this point, I sponsored Pete, and he got about 15 months sobriety. And then, he went out and took a drink. He ended up in North Carolina, ended up in the Veterans Hospital. 43 years old, his liver burst, and he died. Now, they brought him back to West Virginia to bury him. Now, I don't know how you do it in Akron, but in West Virginia, we do not throw people in the ground. We go to the funeral home 2 or 3 days, then we throw them in the ground. So the first night, I went down to the funeral home to see Pete's family and Barbara and the kids and so forth, And I noticed over in the corner there was this beautiful guy standing there, one of these country boys. He's tall and he had rosy cheeks and he looked real familiar. And I just looked at him and said hi to him and so forth and didn't think anything of it. The next night I'm back at the funeral home, the guy's there again. So it starts to bug me. So I walk up to the man and I said, you know, your face is real familiar. I should know you. He said, yeah, you should know me. He said, 3.5 years ago, my sponsor and you, me and Mr. Arrogant George, 12-stepped me. And he said, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I've got my family back. He said, I go to meetings out in the country 3 and 4 times a week. He said, my family's with me. It's beautiful. I have a nice, wonderful life. And I'm still trying to think where. I mean, I don't even know who I was with. I said, well, trying to remember. I said, well, who's your sponsor? He said, you're looking at him in the casket. He said, my sponsor is Pete. Now, I'm here to tell you that you're not going to call Pete a loser to that man. Because what Pete did in his sobriety, in his sober moments, he took this man to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked to him about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, Mr. Arrogant Alcoholic, I had forgotten him, you know. But he had carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to this man. And to him, Pete was not a loser. And from that day on, I subscribe to you that Pete was not a loser to me either. Pete was a winner. Winners are losers who keep trying. And I'd like to say to you in closing, I hope that I only carried 1/10 of the message that Pete did to that old drunk back in West Virginia. And I love you so dearly, so very much, and thank you for welcoming me home.